It isn't shared.
Thank you. We've certainly been favored by extraordinary luck during this inquiry, and it'll be entirely our own fault if we do not clear it up. So now, with your permission, I shall continue my investigations outside and alone. Miss Holder, I will see you later. Watson, I shall find you...
Why, with me in the drawing room, I hope. Taking tea?
In which place, if I may, I will eventually join you.
After Holmes had left, Holder and I made our way downstairs for some refreshment. We asked Miss Holder to join us, but pleading a headache, she instead went off to her room. For more than an hour, Holmes was absent, finally appearing at the door, his feet heavy with snow, his features as inscrutable as ever.
I think I have now seen all there is to see, Mr. Holder, and can now serve you best by returning to my rooms. Watson...
But Mr. Holmes, the gems, where are they?
I cannot tell.
Then my son? Can you give me no hope on any score?
Call upon me between 9 and 10 tomorrow morning, and I will do what I can to clarify the position. And Mr. Holder, I am to understand, am I not, that you give me carte blanche to act for you? That there's no limit on the sum I may draw as long as I recover the stones?
I would give my fortune.
Oh, very good, very good. Watson, let us collect our coats. As always, there is much to do and little time in which to accomplish it.
It was not yet 3 when we found ourselves in our rooms once more. So quickly had Holmes seemed to come to grips with the case. And indeed, once back inside 221B, he immediately vanished into his bedroom, whence he emerged a few moments later, dressed as a common loafer, and with his shiny cedar coat, his red cravat, and his exceedingly worn boots, he was a perfect sample of that class. Stopping at the sideboard on his way to the door, he cut a slice of beef, put it between 2 pieces of bread, and placed it in his pocket. I inquired where he was going. He indicated that it was to purchase some new footwear, and then, with a twinkle in his eye, abruptly left. I sighed and settled before the fire, toasting both a muffin and myself. And then, what with the early beginning to the day, the cold outside, the heat inside, well, before I knew it, it was tea time, and Holmes burst in, swinging an old elastic-sided boot in one hand. Then, after informing me he had been back to Streatham, amongst other places, he went to his room, changed into his regular clothing, poured himself a cup of tea, borrowed my service pistol, and vanished again. And the next time I saw him was the following morning at the breakfast table, and fresh and trim as possible.
Excuse me beginning without you, Watson, but you remember our client has an early appointment this morning. In fact, I shouldn't be surprised if that were he. Come in. Some coffee, old fella.
Yes.
Here, let me. Ah, Mr. Holder.
Mr. Holmes, Dr. Watson.
Mr. Holder, what on earth...
Gentlemen, I must sit. I have become an old man overnight, and I see from your expressions that I must now look like one.
Here, Mr. Holder, join us, I beg you. Some coffee.
Thank you, Dr. Watson, thank you.
My dear sir, what has happened?
What has happened is that 2 days ago I was happy and prosperous without a care in the world, while now I am left to a lonely and dishonored old age. My niece, Mary, has deserted me.
My dear
sir. I wanted to speak to her this morning. The servants couldn't find her. Her bed had not been slept in, and this note was lying on the hall table.
Watson, would you?
Dearest uncle, I feel I have brought this trouble on you, and that if I had acted differently, this terrible misfortune might not have occurred. I cannot, with this thought, be ever again happy under your roof, and feel that I must leave you forever. Do not worry about my future, for that's provided for. And above all, do not search for me, for it will be a fruitless labor. In life or in death, I am your loving Mary.
Sir Holmes, do you have any idea what could have happened to her? What does this mean?
What it means, Mr. Holder, is that the best of all possible solutions has occurred.
But are you mad, Mr. Holmes? Why, this note may imply that she has killed herself.
Yes, she may well have done, but not in the way you think. Mr. Holder, the first thing for me to say is that for some time now there has been an understanding between your niece and Sir George Burnwell.
What? My Mary? Impossible.
No, I'm afraid it's certain. Neither you nor your son knew the true character of this man whom you admitted to your family circle. A ruined gambler, a desperate villain, a man without heart or conscience, and very much the sort of man your niece would know nothing of, but who would have quickly observed her naivety. And how easy it would be to make her his tool by breathing those same vows to her he has breathed to 100 others. I don't know what eventually passed between them. I do know that by the night of the robbery, she was completely in his hands and in the habit of seeing him nearly every evening.
Ah, the whole window.
Correct. You recall, Mr. Holder, how you came downstairs that night to check the house was secure and caught your niece at the hall window. She immediately spoke of Lucy having been outside in order to lull any sense of suspicion that you might have had. But what had really happened was that your niece had been speaking through the window to Sir George Burnwell and had told him, no doubt as a piece of lover's gossip, of the coronet. He, however, immediately saw his chance and, bending her to his will, persuaded her to help him steal it.
This is terrible. Awful. How can I believe it? I always thought I knew that Mary loved me.
And so she did, and still does, as no doubt she still loves Arthur. But there are women in whom the love of a lover extinguishes all other loves, and Mary, I think, falls into this category. But to continue with my narrative, your niece had given Sir George Burnwell the information about the coronet. He ensnared her into stealing it and passing it out of the hall window to him. All of which would have gone to plan, except your son, Arthur, was uneasy that night with his gambling debts hanging over him, and lying awake heard the soft tread of his cousin Mary passing his door. Looking out, he saw her entering your dressing room. He slipped on some clothes and waited until she emerged with a coronet, followed her downstairs and saw her pass it out through the window and then slip back to her room. He took no action against her, as this would have meant him being responsible for the exposure of the woman he loved. But as soon as she left the scene, Arthur threw open the window and vaulted out. He caught up with Sir George at the end of the lane where a struggle ensued for the jewels. Something snapped, and your son found himself holding the coronet. He rushed back inside, slamming the hall window, and then up to your dressing room, where, simply thinking the coronet twisted, he was trying to straighten it when you came in and accused him.
Good heavens, is this possible?
Which, of course, is why he wanted to go out for 5 minutes to look for the missing piece.
Indeed, and also why Miss Holder fainted when she saw the scene between Arthur and his father, not because of any rush of horror at the scene, but because she realized Arthur must know the sequence of events...
And the part she played in. And yet my brave boy still quietly accepted my blame. Oh, was ever a father so blind? Oh, Arthur, what have I done?
Your son, Mr. Holder, was fully and rightly expecting your thanks. Instead, you had him arrested.
Dr. Watson, I wonder, is there any more coffee?
Let me have your cup, Mr. Holder.
Of course, I knew nothing of this when I arrived at the house. What I did know was that snow had fallen heavily in the recent past and had then frozen. Snow bears readily definable imprints of boots, shoes, and feet, and freezing records them. I therefore made it my immediate business to walk right round the house to discover what I could. In the tradesman's path was a simple story. A woman's prints and another set, round at one side. A female had spoken with a male with a wooden leg. I assumed this was the maidservant and her greengrocer and gave them no more thought, notwithstanding your niece's constant effort to throw suspicion on them. The stable path, however, told a far more sinister and complicated tale. A double line of tracks of a booted man going to, then coming from, the side window. Then a second double line of naked feet, in part, over the prints of the boots. I followed both these sets of prints to the end of the lane. There the snow was all cut up, as if a struggle had taken place. There were also a few bloodstains on the ground. Then Boots, as we shall call him, went on by himself, while naked footprints turned back to the house. I followed Boots a few more yards down the lane to the pavement, where another bloodstain told me it was Boots who had been cut in the melee, at which point I made my way back to examine the inside of the property, and especially the hall.
I recall you seemed to pay great interest to the sill of the side window.
Where I found the imprint of a bare foot, which in turn enabled me to reach an initial conclusion. A man had been waiting outside the house. Somebody had brought him the gems. This deed had been overseen by someone with bare feet who pursued and struggled with a thief for the coronet. But I had to ask myself, who was this opponent, and who had brought the coronet to the window to give to this opponent, and who had given chase? Now, the pursuer was obviously your son, whom you'd already described as only wearing trousers and shirt. But what of the identity of the other?
This is fascinating, Mr. Holmes. Shocking, but fascinating. So what then?
It's an old maxim of mine that when you've excluded the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Now, I knew it was not you who brought down the coronet, which left your niece and the maids. But if it were one of the maids, your son would not allow himself to be accused in her place, which left only your niece, whom Arthur loved and would therefore naturally want to protect. But who was her confederate? A lover, certainly, for who else could outweigh the love and gratitude she felt for you? But as she never went out and you hardly received, how could she have met this lover unless it was a friend of your son's?
Sir George Burnwell.
Yes, a man known as bearing a highly doubtful reputation among women. And if I could prove he owned the boots which fitted the imprints in the snow...
So you came home, donned a disguise and called on him. Brilliant.
Not quite, Watson. Initially, I called on his man, offered to purchase a pair of Sir George's cast-off boots, and then took one of them to Streatham to try it against the footprints.
And it fitted?
Perfectly.
Holmes, you excel yourself.
Well, you may be right, Watson, you may be right, but I still wanted a final check. If boots were Sir George, this would mean he'd sustained a wound. So again, I came home, changed my clothes, borrowed your pistol, and went to call. But this time on Sir George himself. And... as my own man.
Mr. Sherlock Holmes to see you, sir.
Thank you, Johnny.
I think I recognise
you. That'll be all for the moment. Come in, Mr. Holmes. You'll take something, I trust? Johnny, that will be all.
I've seen that cove somewhere before, Cuff.
My God, Johnny, if I could meet your wages, I'd turn you off tomorrow.
I'll tell you, I've seen him.
Johnny, that will be all.
Well, if you won't take any notice of me, that's all right.
There's a distinct servant problem these days, Mr. Holmes. Now, Madeira?
A nasty cut, Sir George, over your eye.
A slip on the ice. It's very easy for one to lose one's footing in uncertain conditions.
Which is why one should always be sure of keeping a supply of excellent footwear to hand. I, in fact, purchased a pair of your old boots earlier today from your servant.
Really?
Their workmanship was quite unique, quite unmistakable in size and cut, I should imagine, to anyone really interested in identifying them. I might add, I was dressed as a loafer.
You could have been dressed as the King of France, and you would still have got them off Johnny, providing you had ready money. You are sure you will not join me?
I then took one of those boots to the house of my client, a Mr. Holder of Streatham. I believe you're on varying degrees of intimacy with the members of his family. While there, I tried your boot against some footprints left in the snow by a nocturnal visitor to the house the previous evening. The match was perfect. Good enough to bring a prosecution in any court in the land.
Indeed!
Sir George, if you insist on taking that life preserver down from the wall to show me, I shall insist on taking out my service revolver to show you.
You know, Mr. Holmes once heard a great deal about you. All of which unfortunately seems to be true. However, one thing you will not do is prosecute. Neither you, nor he who employed you, nor those beyond him would countenance the scandal. Which leads us to a stalemate, I think.
A prosecution would not be in the public interest, I agree. However, I can inform you I have carte blanche to deal with you for the missing object. I propose £1,000 apiece for the stones you hold. That is to say, give
what?
Me the missing piece...
3,000? 3,000? Dash it all, Mr. Holmes, I've been done. I let him go 600 the job lot. Now, tell me truthfully, there's a good fella. Was ever a man's luck as bad as mine?
What an unmitigated scoundrel.
Perfectly dreadful.
And little remains to be said. For a consideration, rather a large one, Sir George provided me with the name of his receiver in Seven Dials, from whom, after much chaffering, I got the stones at 1,000 apiece.
Oh, you
then
mean...
looked in upon your son, told him all was resolved, and eventually got to my bed at 2 o'clock after what I may call a hard day's work. There is the missing piece. Now you have your checkbook. 3,000, I believe, plus the matter of the reward.
Very reasonable, Mr. Holmes.
A pen, Mr. Holmes.
Thank you, Doctor. A day that has saved England from a terrible public scandal. I owe you a great deal, Mr. Holmes, a great deal.
More than anything you owe me, Mr. Holder, is what you owe your son. A very humble apology to a noble lad. I speak the truth, Mr. Holder, when I say I would be proud if any son of mine had behaved as Arthur has in this affair.
Yes, yes, of course. I must fly to my dear boy to apologize for the wrong I have done. He will come in with me to the firm. I shall begin again with him. Thank you, Mr. Holmes. Dr. Watson, thank you from the bottom of my heart. No. No, no, don't ring, I beg you. I shall see myself out. Your skill has exceeded all that I have heard of it, Mr. Holmes. Can it possibly inform me where Mary is now, I wonder?
I think we may safely say that she is wherever Sir George Burnwell is. It is equally certain, too, that whatever her sins are, they will soon receive a more than sufficient punishment.
In The Beryl Coronet, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Madison and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams. Alexander Holder was played by Anthony Newlands and his son Arthur by Angus Wright. With Petra Markham as Mary, Ian Lindsay as Jawny, and Timothy Carlton as Sir George Burnwell. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The violinist was Leonard Friedman. The Beryl Coronet was dramatized for radio by Vincent McInerney and directed by Enid Williams.
There is a power, a deep, organizing power, a man who pervades London. He sits motionless, like a spider in the center of its web. But that web has 1,000 radiations, and he knows every quiver of each of them. He is the organizer of half that is evil and nearly all that is undetected in this great city. He is the Napoleon of crime.
The Final Problem by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Dramatized for radio by Bert Cools. With Clive Madison as Sherlock Holmes and Michael Williams as Dr. John Watson. And featuring Michael Pennington as Professor James Moriarty. The Final Problem.
Equals L over 1 plus E cos theta. So, you see, gentlemen, by the application of quite straightforward mathematical principles, the mystery becomes clear. The minor astronomical bodies have yielded up their secret and stand revealed for what they are, the scattered remnants of another world, now lost. Gentlemen, I thank you for your patience.
The overall shape is that of a pyramid. At the base, the great mass of the criminal fraternity, recruitable at need. As we go higher, we ascend in layers, moving all the time nearer and nearer to the heart of the organization. Each layer has fewer members. Level 3 consists of 25 agents. Level 2, which is known as the High Table, of 9. These 9, and only these 9, have direct contact with a man at the apex of the pyramid here. Any questions, gentlemen?
Congratulations, James. Scintillating.
Ah, Sir George, you're too kind.
Nonsense. It's been a long time since we had such a thought-provoking lecture.
Sir, I didn't allow myself to become, shall we say, too rarefied.
If you mean, did I follow your maths, my dear fellow? Of course I didn't.
Oh, dear me, dear me.
You will dine with us tonight, I hope. Just a few founder members. William Christie will be there.
Oh, my dear fellow, please forgive me. I fear I must honour a previous engagement.
Oh, well, if you must, you must. My secretary will arrange a cab for you.
Oh, that isn't necessary.
Nonsense. Least we can do. Jenkinson.
Yes, Sir George.
A cab for Professor Moriarty.
No more questions? Right, thank you, Mr. Holmes.
Patterson.
Now, I don't need to remind you that next Monday's operation is the climax of 3 months' work. Don't let's have any mistakes. I'll be talking to you again before the day. Till then, for pity's sake, keep your mouth shut. You know why. Right, that's all. Mr. Holmes.
Patterson.
If you'll pardon my saying so, sir, you don't look well. This business is really taking it out of you.
Ah, he's a worthy opponent. I don't believe I've ever been so hard-pressed.
You're sure he doesn't realize we're as close as we actually
are? Quite sure. He still believes the high table is completely undiscovered.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Now, we have a great deal of importance to discuss, so I would ask you to be brief and to the point. We shall begin with old business. Mr. Walmsley, the South African gold.
Procured exactly as per the plan. Colonel Moran has the details.
Delivery to our client?
All arranged.
Splendid. Mrs. Collier, the troublesome junior minister.
He will pay the agreed price.
Admirable.
The exchange has been set up for next Thursday, Covent Garden. My girl will hand over a full set of prints and the duplicate negatives.
The originals?
Return to the client. The money will be in the Colonel's hands by 6 at the latest.
Your usual efficient job, my dear.
Would you expect anything less, Moran?
Certainly not.
Enough. Mr. Aberstein, the removal operation. Mr. Aberstein.
Foiled.
Be so good as to amplify that statement.
The operation failed. Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes! That name has been heard far too often at this table of late. How many levels were involved?
6, Professor, and all the upward connections untraceable. We are perfectly secure.
Let us hope so, Mr. Aberstein. For all our sakes.
7 groups of men in all, with a sergeant in charge of each. Final details to be given out on Monday, just before we move. I reckon we can pick up the whole of Level 3 before they know what's hitting them.
And the high table?
Myself, 2 sergeants, 2 dozen men. Broken up into groups of 3 and 4... and arriving separately in unmarked vehicles. They should have no warning at all.
Are you absolutely certain of this?
It comes straight from one of Patterson's men.
Patterson should choose his underlings with more care. I expect it better of him.
Does the man have any idea that this information will get to us?
Do you really have so low an opinion of my people, Moran? Well, as far as he was concerned, he was just boasting to a common tart. Besides, the girl's an expert. She made quite sure he forgot about it as soon as the words were out.
He has no suspicions.
He thinks she's been hanging around him because she likes him. Big, strong man, exciting job, you know the line. He swallowed it completely. Typical male arrogance.
You may give the girl a bonus. 10 guineas.
I already have.
They have the names of everybody on Level 3.
That's what he said. I take it that Holmes is behind this.
Undoubtedly.
I thought you had him in check.
I did. Every move he's made against us has been blocked, until now.
Are we in any danger?
Not yet. But Mr. Holmes must be dissuaded from pursuing this business any further.
Forgive me. I did not hear your knock.
You have less cranial development than I should have expected. It is a dangerous habit to finger loaded firearms in the pocket of one's dressing gown. You evidently do not know me.
On the contrary, I think it's fairly evident that I do. I can spare you 5 minutes, if you have anything to say.
All that I have to say has already crossed your mind.
then possibly my answer has crossed yours.
You stand fast?
Absolutely. Now be so good as to keep both hands in sight.
My dear Mr. Holmes, I have not yet discovered a way of disposing of my adversaries with my memorandum book. With your permission?
By all means.
Thank you. You crossed my path on the 4th of January. On the 23rd, you incommoded me. By the middle of February, I was seriously inconvenienced by you. At the end of March, I was absolutely hampered in my plans. And now, at the close of April, I find that I'm in such a position through your continual persecution that I'm in positive danger of losing my liberty. The situation is becoming an impossible one.
Have you any suggestion to make?
You must drop it, Mr. Holmes. You really must, you know.
You cannot expect me to agree to that.
No. A man of your intelligence must see that there can be but one outcome to this affair. It is necessary that you should withdraw. It has been an intellectual treat to see the way you've grappled with this business, and it would be a grief to me if I were forced to take any extreme measure. Oh, you smile, sir, but I assure you that it really would.
Danger is part of my trade.
This is not danger. This is inevitable destruction. You must stand clear, Mr. Holmes, or be trodden underfoot.
I'm afraid that in the pleasure of this conversation, I am neglecting business of importance which awaits me elsewhere.
Oh, well. Seems a pity, but I have done what I could. I know every move of your game. You hope to place me in the dock. I tell you that I will never stand in the dock. You hope to beat me. I tell you that you will never beat me. If you are clever enough to bring destruction upon me, rest assured that I shall certainly do as much to you.
You have paid me several compliments, Mr. Moriarty. Let me pay you one in return. If I were assured of the former eventuality, I would, in the interests of the public, cheerfully accept the latter.
I can promise you the one, but not the other.
Of the dreadful events of the 4th of May, 1891, there were only three accounts in the public press. Of these, the first and second were extremely condensed, and the last an absolute perversion of the facts. I alone know the truth of the matter, and I am satisfied that the time has come when no good purpose is to be served by its suppression. It lies with me now, therefore, to tell, for the first time, what really took place between Professor James Moriarty and Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Holmes!
What?
What in the world are you doing here? How did you get in?
I regret to say I took the liberty of entering through your back garden.
Holmes, what's wrong?
Hang on, I'll light the lamp.
No! Forgive me, I prefer the dark. Have you any objection to my closing your shutters?
None in the least.
Ah, thank you.
Holmes, what are you afraid of?
Air guns.
Air guns?
You can light a lamp now, it's quite safe.
What do you mean, air guns? Holmes, you don't look well.
I've been using myself up rather too freely.
Sit down, sit down.
Thank you.
Oh, what's all this about? I thought you were in France. Here.
Thank you.
So, the French case is over.
There was no French case.
Hmm?
It was necessary to convince certain people that I was out of the country.
But it was in the papers, the Times.
As Brother Mycroft exerting some influence. Might I trouble you for a match?
Yes, 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 of course. Mm.
Oh.
I think you know that I'm by no means a nervous man, but it's stupidity rather than courage to refuse to recognize danger when it's close upon you.
The air guns?
One particular air gun, uniquely deadly.
Holmes, what does all this mean?
It's not an airy nothing. Look,
why didn't you tell me you were hurt?
It's not serious.
I'll be the judge of that.
Put your hand on the desk. That's it. Now, keep still.
Oh,
sorry. Holmes, what's going on? You look as pale as death.
I have been a little pressed of late.
By what?
You've probably never heard of Professor Moriarty.
Never.
Yes, that's the genius and the wonder of the thing. The man pervades London and no one's heard of him.
Holmes, calm down, please. That's better.
Oh, I tell you, Watson, if I could beat that man, if I could free society of him, I'd feel that my career had reached its summit.
Free society of him? What has he done?
For years now, I've been aware of a power, a deep, organizing power behind every sort of case, behind forgeries, robberies, murders. I have felt the presence of this force.
A single individual.
He is the Napoleon of crime, Watson. If there's a paper to be seized, a house to be rifled, a man to be removed, the word is passed to Professor Moriarty and the matter is organized and carried out.
Yeah. If you know about this man, why haven't you had him arrested?
He's fenced himself around with safeguards. He does little himself. He only plans. It's his agents who do the work. They've sometimes been caught, but the power behind them was never so much as suspected until I deduced his existence.
Do you have any proof of all this? Evidence?
Well, for a long time, it seemed impossible. I was forced to admit that at last I had an opponent who was my intellectual equal. My horror at his crimes was lost in my admiration of his skill.
Holmes, I don't believe you know what you're saying.
And then he made a slip. Only a little slip, but it was more than he could afford when I was so close. I seized my thread and followed it, and it led me to him. In 3 days, Professor Moriarty and all the principal members of his organization will be in the hands of the police. Then will come the greatest criminal trial of the century and a rope for all of them.
Holmes! If this man and his entire organization are within your grasp, why are we hiding behind locked shutters like a pair of fugitives?
It was impossible for me to have done all this without his knowledge.
He knows that you're onto him?
He saw every step I took, but whenever he tried to break away, I headed him off. It's been the most brilliant bit of thrust and parry work in the history of detection. This morning, he tried to warn me off in person. Drop it, Mr. Holmes. You really must, you know.
Did you actually come to blows?
Oh, that's not the professor's way. At least not until his logic tells him there's no other possible action.
Then what's happened to your hand?
I was attacked in the street 3 times.
In broad daylight?
I had to go out and do some business in Oxford Street. I was crossing Welbeck Street and a 2-horse van nearly knocked me down. Then a brick came down from the roof of one of the houses, shattered at my feet.
A brick?
Yeah.
Yes, forgive me, but this man is a criminal genius. And he arranges for someone to throw a brick at you?
I call the police, of course. They try to tell me it was the wind.
What happened next?
I spent the day at Mycroft's rooms in Pall Mall. Now I've come round to you.
And?
On my way, I was attacked by a rough with a bludgeon. Knocked him down. The police have him.
They know him as one of this Moriarty's men?
No. No possible connection will ever be traced. Is Mrs. Watson here?
No. She's away on a visit.
You're quite alone?
Quite.
That makes it easier. Will you come away with me for a week onto the continent?
The continent? Where?
Anywhere. It's all the same to me.
Holmes, in all the years I've known you, you've never once suggested taking a nameless holiday.
Matters have gone so far now that they can move without my help, so it's obvious that I can't do better than get away for the next few days.
Oh. Yes. Yes, I think you should get away from everything for a while. I'd be pleased to come with you.
And start tomorrow morning.
If that's what you want.
Oh, yes, it's absolutely necessary.
Well, good. You'll stay the night.
No.
Holmes, you're not well. I'd like to keep an eye on you.
No, Doctor. You might find me a dangerous guest. I must go.
What about the air gun?
I have to take that risk. I fancy they may have lost my trail. Now, Watson, your instructions.
I presume I'm to go directly to Victoria Station in the morning.
No, no. Dispatch whatever luggage you intend to take to Victoria tonight. Use a messenger you can trust and pack nothing of value.
Very well.
In the morning, take a hansom, but not the first or the second that comes along. You must take the third cab. The third cab, do you understand?
Perfectly.
And drive to the Strand end of the Lowther Arcade.
The Lowther Arcade? Why on earth there?
Watson, this is vital. The instant that your cab stops, dash through the arcade. You must time yourself to reach the other end at exactly a quarter past nine. You'll find a small brougham waiting for you. Get into it, and you'll reach Victoria in time for the Continental Express. Now, do you understand?
Where shall I meet you?
Do you understand your instructions?
Yes, of course.
The second first-class carriage from the front. A compartment will be reserved for us. Now, I must go. The lamp.
I beg your pardon?
It must be dark. I leave through the window and across the garden. If they're still watching me, that may put them off the scent. All right. Goodbye, Watson. Till tomorrow morning. Remember your instructions. To the letter.
Come in, Jenny.
Doctor, I'm sorry.
Oh, that's all right. Is it a patient?
No, Doctor. It's the police.
I'm sorry to disturb you, Dr. Watson.
What's all this about, Constable?
Do you know where we might find Mr. Sherlock Holmes, sir?
No, I'm sorry, I don't. Isn't he in his rooms?
No, sir, he isn't. Thank the Lord.
What do you mean?
Well, sir, about an hour ago, near as we can judge, someone tried to burn the place down.
Oh, my God.
Doctor? Are you all right, sir?
There you are, sir.
No, there must have been some mistake. This can't be right.
The only reserve compartment on the train.
Well, then, this gentleman is in the... Excuse me, Padre.
Signore.
I think you must be in the wrong place.
Scusi.
I'm sorry, sir. I'll have to ask you to get aboard. We're about to go.
But my companion is...
Perhaps he's already on the train, sir. Making his way up the corridor. Now, if you please.
Very well.
I'm the door. Keep your head inside, please, sir.
Holmes.
My dear Watson, you haven't even condescended to say good morning.
Holmes!
Quiet, we can't relax just yet. Look.
What?
There.
Let me through! Let me through!
Hey, now then, sir, that's not necessary.
That train must be stopped. Open this barrier. Stop that train!
I can't do that, sir.
Of course you can't. My apologies.
Regulations, sir, for your own safety.
I completely understand. Tell me, where is the traffic superintendent's office?
Are you telling me that was Moriarty?
Yes. With all our precautions.
But how on earth could he have known our plan? He could hardly have recognized you done up like that.
Grazie, signor. Mille grazie.
He didn't make any slip in coming.
No, I did exactly what you advised.
You recognize your coachman?
No.
It was my brother.
Mycroft driving a carriage?
If the situation was serious enough to persuade him out of his usual well-worn rounds.
Yes, I can believe it. I was worried sick. I was convinced that they caught up with you.
So you've no more doubts as to my stability, Doctor?
I hoped I wasn't quite that transparent. Look...
Not another word. In your position, I should have been every bit as sceptical. Don't think I don't appreciate your agreeing to come with me, even if it was only to chart my progress into complete insanity.
I hoped I might be able to help you.
Yes, and I thank you for the thought. We must plan what to do about Moriarty now.
But this train connects with the boat at Dover. We've shaken him off very effectively.
But my dear Watson, I tell you, this man is on quite the same intellectual plane as myself. Well, surely you don't imagine that I should be baffled by so slight an obstacle.
What will you do, then?
What I should do.
And what would you do?
Engage a special train.
But he'll be too late.
By no means. Now, this train stops at Canterbury, and there's always at least a quarter of an hour delay at the boat. He'll catch us there.
One would think we were the criminals. Let's have him arrested on his arrival.
It would be to ruin the work of 3 months. Nothing can be done until Monday.
What, then?
We shall get out at Canterbury.
What about our luggage?
It may help to throw Moriarty off the trail. I told you to bring nothing of value.
You anticipated this?
Yeah, we'll treat ourselves to a couple of carpet bags and encourage the manufacturers of the countries we travel through.
We're still going to the continent?
Certainly. We'll make a cross-country trip to New Haven and over to Dieppe. Would you be so kind as to inquire about the trains?
Faster! Faster!
Here we are. We change at Ashford Junction for Hastings, Hastings to Lewis, Lewis to New Haven. Arriving New Haven Harbour at 4:15. Holmes?
Already. You see?
What?
There.
Another train.
Moriarty special.
It can't be. He couldn't possibly have arranged it so quickly.
Didn't I tell you his web extends into every corner? He'll be here in a moment. Behind that luggage, Watson. Hmm? Quickly, man! There are limits, you see, to our friend's intelligence. Mm. Shall we proceed? We'll stay in Brussels for the next 2 nights and then move on to Strasbourg, if you agree.
Certainly.
Scotland Yard have instructions to wire me at Strasbourg on Monday night. Mm.
Oh. Holmes?
He's escaped them. I should have known when I left the country there was no one to cope with him.
Ah, Holmes. I wondered where you got to. Are you all right?
I think you'd better return to England, Watson.
What? Why?
Because you'll find me a dangerous companion now. Man's occupation is gone. He'll devote his whole energies to revenging himself upon me.
But he can't possibly know where you are. When he discovered we'd left the train, he surely must have thought you decided to stay in England.
You could be right.
And in any case, I've never yet walked out on you when danger was near. I have no intention of starting now.
Good old Watson.
Would you care to hear my recommendation as your doctor?
I'm sure I should find it fascinating.
You said yourself that you've been working much too hard lately. If you're going to carry on the hunt for Moriarty when we get back to England, you'll need to be in perfect shape. I prescribe that we continue with the holiday.
Where shall we go?
Meyeringen, the principal village in the narrow and fertile Hasli Valley. Particularly of note, the Austrian tower and the church, erected in the early pre-Reformation period and renowned for its 14th century Old Testament frescoes. The beauty of the village and the surrounding area has won for it the title of the front garden of the Bernese Oberland.
What does your florid companion have to say on the more practical subject of places to stay?
Many fine hotels and boarding houses. And there's a list. What do you think?
Yes. This one seems singularly appropriate. The Englischer Hof.
Two beers, mein Herren.
Dankeschön, Herr Steiler.
Thank you.
Bitte schön.
Isn't this a magnificent spot?
Yeah.
You can see two seasons in a single glance. Spring at the foot of the mountains and winter at the peak.
Ooh. Well, perhaps you should consider widening your literary activities to encompass the travel guide.
I shouldn't mind if it meant getting to places like this more often. I'd love to bring Mary here. Her health's not been too good lately.
Oh, my dear fellow, I'm sorry to hear it.
Oh, it's nothing too serious, thank God. Holmes, will you do something for me?
Name it.
Tell me about Moriarty. What's his background? Where did he come from? What's he like?
Which of those questions shall I answer first?
Well, describe him. Give me a thumbnail sketch.
He's tall and thin, rather pale, and with sunken eyes. He has a habit of oscillating his head slowly from side to side. It makes him look curiously reptilian.
And is he actually a professor?
Oh, yes, 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 yes. Or was, at least.
What of?
Mathematics. At the age of 21, he gained a chair at one of the smaller universities. His publications had a European vogue.
You're describing a man with a brilliant career ahead of him.
But he had hereditary tendencies of the most diabolical kind. A criminal strain ran in his blood.
In spite of his extraordinary mind.
Oh, his intellect made it all the more dangerous.
Amazing.
No, not at all. I've mentioned to you before now that I would have made a formidable criminal.
You have. And I believe it.
In Moriarty, I see the man I could have become.
Yeah, my dear Holmes.
I mean it. I can see into the man's mind. I know what drives him, and I understand it completely. There's a beauty to mathematics, Watson, a joyful symmetry, an ultimate perfection for those who can find it. It teaches the value of order and logic and clarity. Eh? Well, in our different ways, we've both followed the same path, Moriarty and I.
I can't accept that.
Oh, it's perfectly true. We both try to impose a certain order on a chaotic world. Well, if my path was by combating evil and his by embracing it, that's a small enough difference among so many similarities.
Holmes, you're talking about a man whose record is black with unutterable infamies.
Started writing it up already, have you?
I've given it some thought.
I think, Watson, I might say that I've not lived wholly in vain.
Oh, my dear chap.
If my record were closed tonight, I could survey it with equanimity. The air of London is the sweeter for my presence. In over 1,000 cases, I'm not aware that I've ever used my powers on the wrong side.
Of course not.
And now I face the most dangerous and capable criminal in Europe. Your memoirs will draw to an end, Watson, on the day I crown my career by terminating his activities.
You really plan to retire?
My retirement would be a price I'd willingly pay.
Oh, what a beautiful evening.
Yes, indeed. This air is incredibly clear. The stars will be glorious tonight.
Yes, I've often thought that I should have used my powers to look into the problems of nature.
Rather than those of society, you mean?
Superficial problems of an artificial state.
But think of the injustices you've fought. Think of the people you've helped. It's not only London. If you'd followed a different line, the world would have been the poorer.
Thank you, my friend.
Herr Steiler, this is a most excellent breakfast.
Dr. Watson, you are too kind.
Ham is superb.
It is cured by my own hand.
Ah.
Please to take as much as you wish.
Thank you.
And tell me, Herr Steiler, did you enjoy your years at the Grosvenor Hotel?
Why, most certainly, Herr Holmes. A very happy time. But this is wonderful. You are a mind reader. Herr Doctor, he is a mind reader.
Oh, you're not the first to think so, Herr Steiler.
But how did you know?
Watson?
Well, let me see. Your English is excellent, of course.
You are most kind.
And you serve from the left and clear from the right, as an English waiter does.
It is the only correct method.
But I can't see how you knew about the Grosvenor Hotel in particular, Holmes.
Mind reading?
No, nothing so esoteric. Only at the Grosvenor could you have learned the recipe for last night's fricandeau of veal. The sauce is quite unmistakable. I must say, I'm surprised that Monsieur Remarque divulged it to you.
He was my very good friend. It was his gift to me on his retirement. Herr Holmes, you are unglaublich, unbelievable. Gentlemen, for years to come, my guests, they shall be told of this, the Englishman who sees my life story in his fricandeau of veal. This is good, is it not? To hear you laugh so in my hotel, it makes me content. You are content also, Herr Holmes?
Yes, Herr Steiner. I am content.
Gentlemen, everything was well?
Yes, everything was very well, thank you.
And what are your plans for today?
What do you suggest?
The walk across the hills to Rosenlow is very popular. A little village, most beautiful.
Huh? What?
Sounds ideal. Work off some of last night's dinner, not to mention breakfast.
Then Rosenlow it is.
Ah, but on no account must you go straight there.
Why ever not?
Because you must make this small detour on the journey. Have you a guidebook?
Here.
Thank you. Ah, yes. Here, you see. Here you must go.
But why?
Because your life will not be complete until you have seen the great falls of Reichenbach.
Suppose. It's immense!
Look at it! A man could spend his life probing the secrets of such a power.
And the sound! I swear I can almost hear voices shouting up out of the water! Steiner was right! I wouldn't have missed this for the world!
This will stretch your pen, Watson! A worthy subject for your prose!
Holmes! No sarcasm! No comments about cheap romanticism and pandering to the masses?
No, my friend. Not here. Not today.
Did you hear something?
Over there. Let's get back to more secure ground.
Herr Dr. Watson. Beasts!
I'm Watson.
This note. This note, Doctor, for you.
It's from Herr Steiler. An English lady has just arrived at the hotel. Gravely ill, he says.
Yeah, Herr Doctor. Blutung.
I'm sorry?
Hemorrhage.
Steiler says she's asking for an English doctor. He doesn't think she'll live.
You must go.
Yes, I'm afraid I must. I can't refuse. Will you come back with me?
No, I believe I'll go on.
Alone? Are you sure?
Herr Doctor, most urgent. Herr Steiner said.
Yes. I'm coming.
I shan't be alone. This lad can stay with me and be my guide on to Rosenlaue. I'll wait for you there.
How will that be?
You will stay? Wegweisen Sie mein Freund nach Rosenlaue?
Ja, das will ich, mein Herr.
Very well. I'll be back with you as soon as I can.
Take care, Watson.
As soon as I can.
Now. Rosenlaue.
Wie lang ist... Mein Junge? Wo sind Sie? Hey!
Save your breath, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
I trust he's no worse.
Doctor?
You didn't write this? There's no sick Englishwoman here.
sick Englishwoman? Certainly not. I wrote nothing.
Oh, my God.
Dr. Watson! Hey, Dr. Watson!
Calm down. Think. He's gone on to Rosenlai. Exactly as we... Oh, God.
Still leaning against the rocks, exactly where I had last seen him, was Holmes Alpenstock. The sight of it turned me sick and cold. He had not gone to Rosenlaui. I stood for a minute or two to collect myself, for I was dazed with the terror of the thing. Then I began to think of Holmes' own methods and to try to practice them. It was only too easy to do. There were two lines of footprints clearly marked in the wet ground. Both led to the end of the path overlooking the falls. There were none returning.
Dear God, they must have fought hand to hand.
Holmes!
Holmes!
As I retrieved Holmes' alpenstock, something bright and gleaming caught my eye. It was his silver cigarette case. And resting beneath it, neatly folded, and in a hand as firm and clear as if it had been written in his study, a note addressed to me.
My dear Watson, I write these few lines through the courtesy of Mr. Moriarty, who awaits my convenience for the final discussion of those questions which lie between us. I am pleased to think that I shall be able to free society from any further effects of his presence, though I fear that it is at a cost which will give pain to my friends, and especially, my dear Watson, to you. I have already explained to you, however, that no possible conclusion to my career could be more congenial to me than this. Indeed, if I may make a full confession, I was quite convinced that the letter from Myrigan was a hoax. I made every disposition of my property before leaving England and handed it to my brother Mycroft. Pray give my greetings to Mrs. Watson, and believe me to be, my dear fellow, very sincerely yours, Sherlock Holmes.
There can be little doubt that a personal contest between the two men ended, as it could hardly fail to end, in their reeling over, locked in each other's arms, into that fearful torrent. There, deep down in that dreadful cauldron of swirling water and seething foam, will lie for all time the most dangerous criminal and the foremost champion of the law of their generation. In an incoherent and deeply inadequate fashion, I have tried to give some account of my many strange experiences in the company of the world's first and only private consulting detective. But now, with a heavy heart, I lay down my pen. These have been the last words in which I shall ever record the singular gifts of my friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, whom I shall ever regard as the best and the wisest man whom I have ever known.
In The Final Problem, Sherlock Holmes was played by Clive Medicine and Dr. Watson by Michael Williams.